upon your selection as a national ambassador for young people's literature, you talked about that you wanted to focus on low-income minority populations. Have you been doing that in this year and a half?
Yes, I have been. I've been I have been focusing on the lowest income, because what we tend to do is to dismiss these kids. We tend to say, well, they're not reading because they don't have the cognitive skills, or they don't read because their environment does not encourage them, and the environment won't encourage them. Well, you know, some of that is true, but I really believe that, you know, we can't afford not to try to bring these kids into the grand American picture. We have to do that. And I think I'm uniquely qualified to do that because of my own background. Whatever these kids are going through, whatever they are going through, I've been down that road. And so I can tell them that.
It's interesting that you should mention that not only can you relate to families that are low income, regardless of their race, you can also relate to kids who've been kind of bullied and teased. That's a whole different audience. But I also understand that when you were younger, that you had a speech impediment, and that it was due to a teacher who encouraged you to kind of put your thoughts down, that maybe you'd be better able to communicate that way, that led you to kind of writing.
That's true. You know, when you mentioned before I was born in West Virginia, well, I was given to the Dean family to raise. So I was not raised by my biological parents. I was raised by foster parents. So I sort of understand where that thing is going. And I had speech problems for years. I went to speech therapy for 10 years, I think. And so people could not understand me sometimes. And that led to a lot of teasing and fighting and what have you. I didn't mind the fighting, by the way.
Because you'd fight back?
Mm-hmm. But when I wasn't playing basketball or some of those sports activity, I stayed home and read. That was my retreat, and that was good. You know, I mean, that took me into a world I wanted to be in.
One of the things that you say is that reading is not optional. It's not to not read, it's not an option. What strategies would you give to families? What can they do to help increase the interest for reading? And what can communities do? Literacy is a really huge push here in the Kalamazoo County area. So there's a number of programs in place.
Okay. My mom, my foster mom, could only read at about, I would guess, a third grade level. But she read with me 3 or 4 times a week. What she read was true romance magazines, almost exclusively. And I would sit there with her. And she was not thinking that she was teaching me something. It was just a pastime that she liked. And so what I say to people is that you have a gift to give to your child. You don't have to be highly educated, but you have a gift to give to that child. And it's up to you to recognize that. It's up to the communities to recognize that. And that every parent has this gift. What we're trying to do in New York, part of this program with the Every Child a Reader Foundation, is to set up a center in which parents or guardians, sometimes grandparents or what have you, can come and learn to read to their children. And reading is a wonderful way of spending some time with a child. It doesn't have to be done in long periods of time. If 30 minutes a day, 3 or 4 days a week is wonderful. But that child will become involved in books. And what we need, we have all the research that's necessary. We don't need to bring the research into the public school system as much as we need to bring that research into the communities. And we need to explain to the communities that it's not the school that can solve the problem. It's the communities that can solve the problem.
We have a program here in the Kalamazoo area called Lift Up Through Literacy, where they have these classes throughout the community, teaching parents and caregivers of children how to boost literacy in the home, doing exactly the kind of thing that you're talking about. I want to switch gears a little bit right now and talk about your work as an author. You're a children's author, primarily. I know you do some poetry, and our listeners should know that you have won 2 Newbery Honor Awards and 5 Coretta Scott King Awards. So you're really quite a distinguished writer. The themes that you write about has a lot to do with your upbringing. It's about things that affect teenagers in urban settings, like gang life. And my understanding is it's really quite gritty. Tell us about that.
I think I've published 106.
106 books?
Yes.
Does that include poetry books?
Yes. So I published, I now have 3 published this year, which will push it up to about 109. Yeah, I'm writing about my background a lot. One of the things that I want to do is to have young people open books and find themselves in the books. We don't very often write about inner city children. We don't very often write about poor children of any race. For example, you know, I was in a city in West Virginia a couple of years ago, and really, really a poor town. Nobody writes about these kids, you know. I mean, nobody writes about them. So when they pick up a book, they're not going to find themselves. I have nothing against Harry Potter. I have nothing against any of these books which deal with more or less a middle-class population. I have nothing against those books, but you really need to have books which are inclusive of all Americans.
So this is a deliberate strategy on your part to help boost reading or interest in reading for children of color?
It's not a deliberate strategy. It's more or less writing about the things I know about and care about a lot. Now, so, and I could have made a lot more money writing in a different vein. I could have written more books about white kids and get a larger market. But I said, well, you know, that's fine, that's good. But let me write about the things I know and the things that I would have liked to have read as a kid. You know, I remember as a child, like 14, 15, and my teacher introduced me to Balzac, who I thought was the most wonderful writer that ever lived. And I was thrilled to death to read all of his stories. And then read books by Anatole France and Pierre Loti. That was wonderful. But then I didn't find myself in the books. So when I became discouraged, I just did not find a place for myself in the world. I mentioned this when I met James Baldwin for the first time. And Baldwin said he felt the same way. And Baldwin, who lived not that far from me in Harlem, Baldwin did not find a place for himself. And he left and went to France to live. Richard Wright went to France. You know, I don't want kids going to France. I want people to find themselves in America. And I want white children to read about black children and look at them as complete human beings, not to look at them as only athletes or entertainers and what have you. But basically, you know, I think I'm against the idea of I have a strategy to do this. I think basically I write because I love it. You know, I love writing. I get up every morning anxious to get to my computer. And I write fast enough, and I have been as successful as I have been, so I have options, you know.
Despite the very gritty and kind of some of the really tough topics that you deal with in your books, there's a sense of hope. And there was a New York Times book review in 2008 where the writer writes, drugs, drive-by, shootings, gang warfare, wasted lives. Myers has written about all these subjects with nuanced understanding and a hard-won, qualified sense of hope. There's always the sense of hope. Is that important? That's important to you.
It is. It is. You have to give kids a sense of hope and a sense that they can rise above their circumstances. One of the things that I want to say to young people, that although your circumstances might not be ideal, and they often are far from ideal, if you talk to some of the thousands of kids I've spoken to, people who with similar backgrounds do well, and it's not always the college education that you need. Or you don't have to finish college at 20 or 21. You can do things at your own pace, at your own level, but you have to believe in yourself. If you don't believe in yourself, it's going to be difficult.
Why is it important that young people read? You say as you've gone out there, you've kind of found that some kids wonder why should they read? You know, they don't see how this applies. How's this going to make them successful ultimately? What is your response to that? What should parents say if their child says that?
Okay, right. Which is why I say to them, reading is not optional. Reading is not optional. And we allow kids to believe that sometimes. When we say things like, books can take you to faraway places, and a book is like a frigate, I think one writer said. And that suggests to me that, okay, all you have to say is, I don't want to go to faraway places, or I don't want to read about Harry Potter's world, and it's fine. It's not fine, because you have to be able to read to survive in this country. One of the things that I discussed in the book, All the Right Stuff, is that there is a social contract in existence, whether you want to deal with it or not is totally immaterial. You have to deal with the social contract. And the social contract says that in our society, there are skills needed to succeed. And that what we will continue to do, because we appreciate these skills, is to structure the society so that reading is important, so that high school graduation is important. And you have to recognize that you don't have a choice. It's like playing in the NFL and saying, "Well, I'm not a physical person, but I'll play." No, you won't.
My understanding is you also tackle a lot of historical topics in some of your books.
I'm so interested in history. It's just fascinating to me. For example, now I'm working on a book on flyers, black flyers, and how many women flew back in the 30s. That's just fascinating. I mean, once you discover that, you really have to bring that history to young people and to say to them, look, this is who you are as much as some civil rights person. I've had it with books on civil rights. This is who you are. There were these scientists who worked back in the turn of the century, African-American scientists who worked as neurosurgeons. And you need to know this as much as you need to know about Thurgood Marshall.
Sounds like you're filling in some information gaps for young people knowledge gaps.
One of the things that I've been working on over the last 2 years, maybe 3 years, is the idea that when people don't read, they create not only a language gap, which is clearly recognizable and which holds them back in life, but there's a knowledge gap that's stunning. It's so stunning that kids don't know anything about stuff that happened within the last 50 years. I am stunned when I talk to kids and they'll ask me questions like, when the Vietnam War happened, how did your brother get there? Did he take a bus? Did you take a bus? Do you know where? They don't know where Vietnam is. They can't find it on a map. And these things hurt kids. They have a limited understanding. They have a limited understanding of what's going on around them. And that stops them. That stops individuals. When I was a kid, what happened in Harlem was that, because we had segregation back there, all of the muckamucks, black muckamucks, had to live with the poor people. So in the apartment building next to me, some guys from Count Basie's band lived. Down the street, there was a horn player who played with the New York Symphony. All these people lived in the neighborhood. And so we could look at them and look at their children as sources of information. Now that's different. Now people move away from the inner city, like in Detroit. Detroit was a hotbed of activity in the 60s of literary magazines coming out of there. But as all the middle class moved out of the black communities, what's left is just abandoned buildings and what have you.
I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about the author Baldwin that you had right down your block there.
Oh, Baldwin was, his father was a minister and what have you, and when they did not have a good relationship. But Baldwin looked for a way. He liked language, and he did not want to be labeled simply a black person. He wanted to, because he was a reader, he wanted to be labeled an intellectual and a writer. And that was wonderful. But then in his reading, he told me that he'd never encountered himself in all of the literature that he was being exposed to. So when he began writing, putting his own community, not all the time, of course, but in his books. So when I first read the first short story that I read of his was a story called Sonny's Blues. And it was about a young man struggling with a drug addiction. But wow, that moved me because it was in my neighborhood. This is my neighborhood. He's talking about my streets. And I devoured that story. I read the story over and over again. And, you know, so when I finally met him, I said, you know, that was the greatest story of my life. You know,
how old were you when you met Baldwin? And how old was him?
He's older than me. He was about 12, 14 years older than me. Mm-hmm. I was not a kid. I was an adult and a novelist, John Killen. I guess I was about 30.
Sounds like he was very receptive to you as another writer.
Because I was introduced to him by another writer, a novelist, John Killens, who wrote And Then We Heard the Thunder. So, you know, black writers, they look at each other, and they have a kinship. And so, you know, of course, when I was a very young kid, Langston Hughes came to my church to read, because at my, you know, at that time, they did not sell many black books in bookstores. And so people would do the church things. You would go into a church with a suitcase full of books and sell them at night, which was kind of cute. But I wasn't interested in Langston Hughes because he was quite a bit older than I was. And he turned out to be a great guy because he helped us when I was in my 20s. Langston Hughes helped the group I was with then to put together a magazine. So, you know.
Wonderful. I want to thank you for joining me today on WMUK.
Thanks for having me.